Hello and welcome to this podcast from the BBC World Service. Please let us know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
This is the Witness History Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Kirsty Reid. In early 2001, Afghanistan's Taliban rulers ordered the destruction of the huge ancient statues of the Buddha in the Bamiyan Valley. It was an act of vandalism that would horrify the world.
Despite worldwide pleas to preserve them, two of the most famous religious statues in the world have been reduced to rubble. The ruling Taliban regime in Afghanistan ordered the destruction of two giant statues of Buddha carved into a cliff face as they want to rid the country of all non-Islamic symbols.
For weeks, the world had tried to persuade Afghanistan's Taliban rulers not to blow up the two giant Buddhas that had stood in the Bamiyan Valley for more than 1,500 years. But as a Taliban spokesman said, they weren't about to back down.
What do you expect from a country or a government when you fire at them, when you criticise them, when you isolate them, when you sanction them? What do you expect?
They had decided to defy international opinion. So the more that we heaped appeal upon appeal, expressing moral outrage, the more, in a sense, we encouraged them.
Michael Semple was the United Nations officer responsible for aid to Bamiyan.
For a whole series of reasons, they wanted to show that they were able to act in defiance. The more that we showed that we were defied, the more they decided that, yes, we've set upon the right course.
This is what the world has lost. It is not just the monumental stone and plasterwork. It is the fragile pictures, a unique heritage. On the walls surrounding the two giant figures were images of the Buddha, painted painstakingly over a long period, Buddha's tree of life, and images of the pleasures of the world. All blasphemy to the Taliban, who cannot bear anything which shows the face or form of a person. It is against their reading of Islam.
The Buddhas had been built before the birth of Islam. They'd survived wars and the invasion of Genghis Khan. For local Afghans, they weren't just relics. Almost everywhere you went within the Bamiyan Valley in the highlands of central Afghanistan, you could see them in their niches, carved into the cliffs.
They weren't this remote and dead monument. They were an integral part of a valley that was alive, that was a lived-in environment. On either side of the Buddhas, there were many other smaller niches, which were the cells where, in the height of the Buddhist civilization in the Bamiyan Valley, the monks used to live and meditate there. The whole Buddha complex was just being lived in and accepted in a very natural way by every succeeding generation of people who'd come to the valley.
In 2001, Syed Mirza Hussein was living with his family in one of the caves in the cliffs between the huge Bamiyan Buddhas.
We didn't have anywhere else to live. We were poor farmers. Since we didn't have a house and there were lots of empty caves, we decided to live there. We chose the caves because in summer they are cool and in winter they're warm and we can save on fuel. In winter it was a good place for us.
Mirza Hussein was arrested by the Taliban along with more than 100 other local men, most of them ethnic Hazaras. In 2016, he told his story to Kawun Kamush of the BBC's Afghan service.
I never imagined they were going to destroy them from head to toe. But when they arrived in Bamiyan, they set up heavy artillery in front of the Buddhas and parked tanks there. They said that the destruction of the Buddhas would be news around the world. They said, we have to destroy the idols like Abraham did during the time of the Pharaoh.
When did you first hear that they were planning to destroy them?
I don't remember the date, but one day when I woke up, everyone was asking, what's happening? Because the Taliban were beating people. One of my friends told me that today the Buddha statues are going to be destroyed. Then we heard heavy firing and explosions and all the prisoners were guessing, what's that noise? A tank? An RPG? A bomb? Until the explosions stopped. Then the Taliban came back saying it was impossible to destroy the statues using artillery, that they needed engineers.
From then on, Mirza Hussain and his fellow prisoners were put to work carrying explosives up to the caves.
They used us to put the explosives in place. Me and lots of others were assigned to install dynamite. They had trucks full of explosives. We had to take all those heavy things, boxes and crates, and pack them close to the Buddha statues. Every 10 meters, there was an armed Taliban guarding us. If anybody made a mistake, he was shot. They killed one of the prisoners right in front of me and told me to take his body into the caves.
Mirza Hussain says that not everyone involved in the preparations to blow up the Buddhas was Afghan.
Some of them had long white robes and wore turbans on their heads. And I didn't understand the language they were speaking when they were trying to tell us how to install the explosives. They seemed scared of the explosives and they kept telling us that a small mistake could kill all of us.
How much dynamite did you have to move?
I can say I moved 2 to 3 tons of explosives. There were 3 caves under the statues and my duty was to put the explosives between the legs of the bigger statue of Buddha, which they call Salsal.
Did you ever dare to say no?
When we were busy putting explosives under the statues, it was clear they were going to destroy them any way they could. We couldn't refuse their orders. They would have killed us on the spot.
By March 2001, the Taliban were ready.
Were you there when the explosions happened?
I was under the Great Buddha when the explosions started. There is a mosque just below it, and we hid in the mosque. There was a long wire leading from the Buddha all the way to the mosque, and they pushed the button from there. When they pushed the button, the whole mosque started shaking from side to side. Rubble and dust started falling all around us, and when we came out, we didn't look human because our faces were covered in dust. Then we saw the legs of the statues had been destroyed.
What did the Taliban say after the explosions?
After the explosions, they started dancing and celebrating, saying, "We are the destroyers of the Buddha." Then, as the dynamite had only destroyed the legs of the statues, they started cutting and destroying different parts of the statues using other tools and explosives for a few more days. Finally, they brought 9 cows and killed them to celebrate.
It did take them a long time to carry out this massive demolition job, and everybody was hoping that they would somehow leave something, but of course they didn't. They carried on and there was nothing left but just the flat sandstone at the back of the Buddha's niche. I felt as if there was a part of me and a part of people I loved had gone irretrievably.
I feel extremely disappointed and unhappy. Not just me, but everyone in Bamiyan. It was a big blow to Bamiyan. When I'm cycling or walking around the town and I see the destroyed statues, I feel unhappy, hopeless. There were 3 statues, Salsal, Shamama and the baby Buddha. These statues were important for Bamiyan and its people. They were important around the world and we were proud of them.
The Taliban said they destroyed them for Islamic reasons. You are a Muslim. Do you agree?
These statues were our ancient heritage. I, as a Muslim, condemn the Taliban's actions because they just wanted to destroy everything. They were a bunch of bad people. I still remember taking part in destroying the statues. It was like taking an axe to my own home.
In 2003, UNESCO listed the cultural landscape and the archaeological remains of the Bamiyan Valley as a World Heritage Site, in an attempt to protect what is left of the valley's artistic and religious heritage. That's it for this edition of the Witness History podcast. If you'd like to listen to more of our first-hand accounts of the past, just search on your podcast app for BBC Witness History.
Goodbye to All This is a podcast about life and death. Above all, though, it's about love.
The family we've made is everything to him, and I am everything to him and he to me, even through those times we forget it.
It's about losing the thing you are most sure of, carrying on with the balancing act that is being human, rediscovering your place in the world.
Accepted wisdom in the dating world these days is that you'll never find anyone if you're not online. I accept one date. He tells me he's allergic to dairy. And all I can think to talk about is how much my dead husband loved cheese. We don't meet again.
From the BBC World Service, this is Sophie's story. But in many ways, it could be all of ours. You can hear all 12 episodes now. Just search for Goodbye to All This wherever you get your podcasts.